We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Stéphane Lacoe, joined by my co-host, Matt Wispay. This podcast is being brought to you by Blue Wire, Action Network, and of course, RotoViz. You can find us on Twitter at, well, me, Stéphane Lacoe, and Matt is Wispy the Kid. Thank you so much for listening. As you know, the podcast drops both on our College Football Fantasy Podcast stream, as well as the RotoViz mainstream on Fridays. Matt, I know you got some things in your mind. Let's just jump right into it. Go.
So it's not really, we have this in here as Matt Rants as the segment. And
no, just, that's not what my show notes say.
Well, I'm trying to keep some editing headaches away from you. But so Matt Rants, and the reason is, that Alabama just signed the number one recruiting. Everyone knows Alabama signed the number one recruiting class in the history of college football, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Alabama is recruiting at a next level thing, and Alabama's coming off a national championship year. But I do think that there's this underlying thing that people don't understand about college football, and it's a really dirty side of college football. And Alabama is the like highlight reel of it. And I just want to read off some numbers for you. And so in Alabama's class of 2017, they had 29 commits from that class. So pretty far above what most people are bringing in, like 25-ish. In 2018, Alabama, hey, thanks, 247, you're real slow. This was their down year. They only had 21 in that class. In 2019, I'm pretty sure this is another big number. 2019, they signed 27. And then in this year's class, to this year's class, they had 25 in 2020. And in 2021, they signed, I believe the total number is 27. So just doing quick math for people, that's 100. And these are players that all still would have one, potentially 2 years of eligibility. And this isn't not including the fact that they're going into the portal and they're currently seen as the favorite for one of the premier linebackers in the transfer portal, Henry Tua, I'm going to say Tuaatoa, whatever. I understand people giving Nick Saban the credit for building these rosters and for doing this, like being the greatest coach of all time and giving him all this respect. I do think people need to understand that this is the reason why the SEC will always dominate the recruiting rankings at the end of the year. And the reason why Alabama has like 9 number one classes in at Nick Saban's time at Alabama is because he does not care if he is throwing kids off the roster. So he will cycle players through the program because I don't know if you know this, Stéphane. The scholarship limit on a normal year is 85 players. Right. I just listed off well over 100 players that would still have eligibility and they're still going to the portal. I would guess that in the next few weeks, you will see a rash of players, quote unquote, voluntarily entering the transfer portal out of Alabama because they were basically told, all right, you no longer have a roster spot here. And the one kind of dirty secret that people who are anti-pay the players always like to forget is that scholarships that these kids receive, 99% of them are not four-year scholarships. They are one-year scholarships. So these players are brought in on scholarships that after 1 year, they can be terminated and they can be released from their scholarship. So the schools have a lot of flexibility to turn over their roster in this way. And looking at what Alabama is doing right now and seeing how they're building up this monster another year, you just have to sit here and wonder, like, all right, who is about to leave the program? And I mean, cool. Great job, Nick Saban. You just built a dynasty and you probably just threw out like three kids that thought that they could have gone to any Power Five program in the country. And because they were playing behind four NFL players, they may never actually get to have a shot at the NFL. So it's just, I felt like ranting about this because of the pretty much all the rumors right now are that Tuatoa is going to go to Alabama over, I think Oregon was one of the key people. I think USC was one. There were some early talks that he was with Alabama, I mean, not with Alabama, with Ohio State. But I mean, realistically, it's just funny because they are getting the highest of praise and they deserve the praise for this recruiting class they put together. But it's funny to see how they never really have to have a year when they only can accept 19 commits because they flat out don't care about the roster size. So, yeah.
And it's just not something that most people talk about. Like you said, everyone talks about, oh, Nick Saban's awesome. He's such a great head coach. They bring in the best talent. They win all the games. And you don't really hear about the players that are getting screwed over in the process. And
yeah,
it really is a problem. And I do think it's worth talking about because it's again, another example of how little control these players have over their own futures. And I think it's a real problem in college sports where these guys are not getting paid. They have very little control and the coaches have all the control. A coach can up and leave whenever they want. A coach can, they don't have to sit out a year. Like, you know, like I know that's changing now with transfer rules being adjusted, but it just another example of how the power does not lie with the players. And I think any small thing that can be done to change that should be done. And yeah, I think there should be, and I think you're alluding to this, I think there should be a cap on how many players a school can bring in. I know that when I play NCAA football, which we need to do a whole episode just talking about how the game is coming back, but I digress. Like you can only bring in 25 new players a year. If you give out 25 scholarships, no transfers are coming to your program. If you give out 21, maybe you'll get four, but you have a cap on how many players can enter each year based on your scholarship limits. And I think it's crazy that a team like, you know, Alabama can just bring in whoever they want and then just kick off these poor kids like you're talking about. It's a real problem.
Yeah. So I just needed to rant on that for a second because when I saw that coming in, I saw somebody comments on the fact that Alabama just brought in 27 players and they're still going to the portal. And I understand that there's the super senior rule that's in effect this year where basically any of the players that were given an extra year of eligibility due to COVID rules last year don't count against the 85 scholarship limit. But they're pushing that number somehow because they can't have the space because they definitely don't have 20 super seniors. So it's a unique thing to see. Not even unique. It's a kind of a thing that you're not used to seeing. So yeah, but that was my little rant because we don't have a lot of news and notes right now other than EA Sports coming back. But
yeah, that's the only thing that matters. 2023, baby.
But we did hint at this on our last episode. We started talking about Devy players that we were really into, and we both made an appearance on the Campus to Canton, College to Canton?
College
Travis's. To Canton. Travis's podcast. We both made an appearance and we started going over some of our favorite returning players, but he had clearly stolen that idea from our show doc because we were already planning on talking about the top five players at each position, in college football. So let's start off with quarterback. It's easy. We're going to hit our top five starting at five because, well, you always want to end with one and with the best player.
That's right. Yeah. So I'll let you go first here. Give me your, again, this is returning players, players that we will be watching on Saturdays, hopefully. And I'd like to hear your fifth favorite for Debbie purposes, not for talent or all that kind of stuff, but how you rank them for Debbie purposes.
So I think the one thing I always have to clarify in my ranks is that the way that I look at these players is often how would I make the draft pick? So yes, there are probably players that I am off of the consensus that I don't pick, and it's because I would not pick them. So even though they may have some market value out there, I tend not to just lean on that. So I'm going to start with number five. It's a player that before last season I said was going to fight for the starting job at Alabama, and obviously Mac Jones took a step and he didn't, but it looks like he's going to be the starting quarterback this year, and that's Bryce Young. He is a 2020, he was in the class of 2020. He's the number one quarterback in that class according to the 247 composite ranks. And so here he's a little bit more dual threat than Mac Jones, so that should open up a new element to the offense. I actually think if you are a like DFS player, he's probably going to become one of the staples next year because I do think his legs are going to open things up quite a bit. There are a couple downsides to him. He is 5'11", and I know that in this world where 5'4", Kyler Murray is starting quarterback for Arizona, height doesn't matter as much. I worry a little bit when I compare him to someone like another name we'll mention later, DJU. Just that it's one of those things that I do still think that there are going to be some NFL teams that are hesitant to pull the trigger on going with Bryce Young if he doesn't actually measure it like 6 foot tall. But the other big concern for me, and we did mention this on Travis's podcast, is after they pulled in the big four wide receivers that they all know and everyone knows at Alabama, the Ruggs, Judy, Waddle, Devonta Smith, that they basically took a break. They brought in a few guys, but no one that really moves the needle. Obviously, there's Bolden and there's garbage can Mechie. But they really didn't
one day actually sit down and talk about why you hate
because he's bad at football.
Some other time we'll talk about it.
He's bad at football, but. So that's my only concern with him. It's actually the reason why an article I wrote for the Action Network, I didn't recommend him as a play on the Heisman because I do think that he's a little bit more risky just because his receiving core is going to be so young that they may not pass as much as we would typically expect from this offense. So that is my number five. Who do you have at number five?
So I think to preface this, when we go through these lists, having someone at number five doesn't necessarily we hate them. I feel like a lot of people are going to hear me say this name. You're like, why are you so low? And, you got to put him in an order. It's not that I don't like him.
It's because you hate him.
It's because I hate him. It's because he plays in the Pac-12 and he doesn't play for the Ducks. It's Keaton Slovis, 6'2", 200 pound. He's going to be a junior next year. So he will be eligible, which, is bonus points. But something that I don't really love about Slovis is just his lack of mobility. He did not finish any season, either season, I should say, with positive rushing yards on the year. Of course, in college, sacks are counted against you as a rushing stat. But still, he's not going to give you points on the ground. He has never had a rushing touchdown in his career. But what he does do is he throws the ball and he throws it all over the place. I think he has a lot of talent. I know that they're losing a couple of wide receivers to the NFL, but they still have a really good wide receiver core. They also brought in a couple of four-star wide receivers that I think will probably be pushing for playing time. At least one of them will be. If I had to bet, I would guess that it's going to be Kyron Ware Hudson, a four-star recruit. He was ranked, in that 20 to 25 range at the position. So I think he could help right away. But Slovis is a guy who he's going to put up the numbers because of that, the air raid offense that he plays in. Surprisingly, his yards per attempt is pretty low. He didn't have a great year from that perspective. He threw 7 picks in just 6 games. So I'm hoping that he can take a step there. But those are like, I feel like I'm being more negative than positive on him. But that's why I have him at 5. I do think he has a talent. I do think he has the ability to be a fairly high drafted quarterback in the NFL. He's got the look of an NFL quarterback, if you will. So Slovis is my number 5. Who do you have at number 4?
So this is going to shock you. I have Kadon Slovis at number 4.
Is that different than Caden Slovis? I don't actually know how to say his first name.
I think it's Kadon. But so here's the thing about him. Here are the positives. He has completed 70% of his passes in college. He has 47 passing touchdowns, and he has an adjusted yards per attempt of 8.6. Here's why he's 4 and not 2, like a lot of people may have him. He went from 9.4 adjusted yards per attempt as a freshman down all the way to 7.4. Now, with that being said, when you have a smaller sample size, when you are only playing 6 games, if you have a couple of games where you do throw a pick, and in this case, he threw a pick in pretty much every game. When you have those situations, it's really going to hit you a little bit harder than if you have a 12-game season and maybe you don't get the cupcakes that you normally would get. So I do think that he is a player to watch. If that adjusted yards per attempt jumps back over 9 next year, I would fully expect him to be in that right up there in the conversation with some of the guys we mentioned a little bit later. So I do still like him. I'm a little more iffy on the air raid offense here. I do think that it maybe made him look better than he was. I actually thought that they made the wrong choice. Even though I don't have him ranked, I do think JT Daniels is a better player. And if I were the USC head coaching staff, I probably would have stuck it out with him. But it's hard to bench a guy that had such a strong true freshman season. So that is my number 4. Who do you have it for?
So this is going to be a super unpopular pick because I know other people are way higher on Sam Howell than I am. And to be honest, I want to be a fan. And maybe I just got really unlucky in the games that I watched. He just had bad performances. But I am just not 100% sold on him being the number 1 guy or even the top 3 guy. So he's number 4 for me. I still do like him. Don't get me wrong. He is he's not quite as tall as Slovis, but 6'1", 225, again, going to be a junior. He put together like a really solid season for North Carolina. His interception rate was up a little bit this year, but he also was able to throw for a much higher average yards per attempt this year than his freshman year. He also had dynamic weapons. And I think one of the interesting questions is like, what it's the whole chicken and the egg argument. Like, is Howell like benefiting from De'Ami Brown and Newsom being there, or are they benefiting from him or both? One thing that did concern me a little bit about Howell is in games where they couldn't get the run game going first, he seemed to struggle. He really did rely on defenses coming up to stop those great running backs and Carter and Williams. And once that happened, he was able to kind of let it loose, which is why a lot of times his second half stats were a lot better than his first half stats. But I do think he will be a very highly drafted quarterback. I could see him being the number 1 quarterback taken in the NFL draft a year and 3 months from now or whatever it is. But for me, Howell's number 4, unpopular, I'm sure. But that's how I've got it.
Yeah, you're wrong for that one. So this is a guy I do like at number 3. I think if I was drafting a team that was a little more set and didn't need immediate assistance, this guy would probably be higher for me. But I'm going to put DJ Uiagalelei at number 3. And it's only because there are other players that are going to be there a little bit sooner and that there's a little bit of weight that I add to that. So with Uiagalelei, he played, I believe it was 3 games last year.
I think one of them was just partial, but yeah.
Whatever, I'm not going to go and look. But right. Uiagalelei was the number 2 quarterback in the class of 2020, but he was kind of seen as the heir apparent to Clem or to Trevor Lawrence. They went out and they got their guy. And I said on Travis's podcast, I think his floor in the NFL looks like it is a Cam Newton. He does have the mobility that you don't necessarily expect from a guy that is that big, like, strong quarterback. He very well could be like a Big Ben early on his career, was a little bit more mobile. So I see him as a very good quarterback option. I think that he will, let's see, he completed in his whatever nine appearances this year, he completed 66.7% of his passes, averaged 8.7 adjusted yards per attempt, and threw five touchdowns to zero interceptions. And I did mention his running ability. He did score four rushing touchdowns on 28 attempts. So it shows at least a willingness to run when the situation works out in his favor. So I think he's a really interesting prospect. And we talked about Slovis having the look. Uangalele is 6'4", 250. Yeah, that dude has the look of a linebacker who's just playing quarterback, but is also the best quarterback on most rosters. So I'm a huge fan. I think he is special. And yeah, I mean, no reason to doubt him. It's just a matter of, do you have the ability to wait 2 years?
Right. And that's a good question. And that kind of brings up my number three, who you've already talked about, and that's Bryce Young. I love this guy. He did not have anything worth talking about this year as far as stats, because Mac Jones obviously was just fine. But Bryce Young was a number one dual threat quarterback in his class. His 247 composite score was a 9.994, so like about as high as you can friggin' get. He has been a winner at every level. He was the MVP of the All-American Bowl or whatever. Like, he's an awesome player. I'm excited to see what he can do. What I love about him is that dual threat ability, which in fantasy is so important. He's going to be drafted. I mean, it's impossible to say because we're so far away, but he's going to be drafted high. He's going to be expected to be a franchise quarterback, and I think he's going to really flourish in the NFL. I think the rushing floor is kind of what sets my, again, like we're talking about these top three guys, that's what sets Bryce Young apart from the number four, number five guy for me. It's just his ability to do damage on the ground. But we've talked about him already. Now let's go to your number two, Matt, someone who neither one of us has talked about yet. Who'd you got?
So, by the way, you mentioned that it's impossible to say where players are being drafted. I do want to point out that our good friends over at Debbie Watch have just finished up their second mock draft of the year. So we do have a tiny bit of data out there. They've done two, so I can, every once in a while, I can throw in a draft position just be for posterity's sake. Right now, Young was drafted he was drafted seventh overall in a super flex league. So,
wow.
In Debbie. So just worth noting. All right. So now let's jump up. Number two, it's my boy, because you hated him clearly. Spencer Rattler. I've been a fan of this kid for a while. He was the number one, I think, not player. He was the number one quarterback in the class of 2019. However, This was seen as more of a, it's weird now because that year was really downplayed publicly, but so many true freshmen actually started that year. So it's kind of a weird dynamic to say, well, this wasn't a great class. Well, okay, maybe it was an awesome class and everyone just misjudged it, but number one player or number one QB in the class, people really thought that he played bad last year. And obviously we all remember some of the really ugly turnovers he had and him getting benched early in the year, but completed 67.5% of his passes and averaged 10.3 adjusted yards per attempt. He's eligible next year. I do think with some of the people that are on his roster, if he puts together another strong year, he's actually probably going to not get pushed out, but be encouraged to go to the NFL. So I do think that this is a guy that will go early on in NFL drafts next year. And yeah, I mean, we're talking about he's one strong season away from being the number one overall pick. So I'm a big fan. I do think that he's very good. How about you surprise us with your number two pick?
Yep, I've also got Spencer Rattler. And I think you bring up a really good point. When I was kind of looking at the numbers, like if someone would have, before I like dove into it and just based on my feel for what Spencer Rattler's year looked like, they said, how many interceptions did Spencer Rattler throw? Plus or minus 9. I would have said, oh, I think he threw, yeah, probably 10, 11. He probably was over that number. But no, he only threw 7 interceptions last year. And in fact, in his last 7 games, he only threw 2. So he really dialed it in. I think we all remember that shocking loss to Kansas State in their second game where he threw those 3 picks and really was a big part of the problem they lost that game. Obviously, you've got to blame the defense for that. But I mean, his turnovers were just so bad. And I think that, you know, that early season bias against him really kind of hurt him for the whole year. And even though he started really, really improving, we didn't give him, or I should say many of us, I know you did, but many of us did not give him the benefit of, you know, what he was actually able to do. Like against Oklahoma State, which, you know, rivalry game, Oklahoma State was considered to be a formidable defense at the time. He went out there and threw for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. Like, he just did a really good job. I think he's going to be continually improving upon his game. You know, being coached by Lincoln Riley is not going to hurt him at all. I think he could end up being like in this group of Oklahoma quarterbacks that are coming into the NFL and being drafted super, super high. I think he's going to be the next one in that series. So I think Spencer Rattler has has huge upside. Maybe not quite as mobile as some people could think or might think, but he still did have 6 rushing touchdowns on the year. So he does have that element to his game. I like Spencer Rattler an awful lot. In fact, there's only one guy I like more. But who's your number one?
Well, so my number one is the person you disrespected earlier on.
Yes.
And that is, drum roll, please. By the way, before we do the drum roll, please. Spencer Rattler rushed for over 1,000 yards in high school and had 14 rushing touchdowns. So he is a little bit more mobile than maybe you're giving him credit for. But number one is Sam Howell. So here's the reason. He's very good and he's available next year. Like I said, I think I would take DJU if I had a little bit more flexibility. But because I'm going to treat this as I kind of want to build up some guys right now, I'm going to take the guy who improved his completion percentage by nearly 7% last year, improved his adjusted yards per attempt by more than a full yard. And yeah, the reason why people think he had a down year is, oh, he had 38 touchdowns as a freshman. Well, in 2020, he had 30. So it's not even like he had a bad year. He was pretty absurd. 2 straight years where he threw for over 3,500 yards, has a career adjusted yards per attempt over 10, which is bonkers, by the way. And, has a career completion percentage of 64.4. Here's you're entirely right, though. We both talked about him a lot this year. Dyami Brown and Daz Newsome were very good players. Will he be affected by them? Yes. If he is affected by them too much, then his draft capital will go down, and that kind of it's unfortunate. So I think we'll get to kind of see what he is this year, and I would say that he looks like, if he takes another step forward, there's no reason to not compare his numbers to pretty much anyone in the country, because he'll be just as productive. And I mean, his entire offensive line is coming back. So yeah, I mean, be on board with him. For his draft position, just for getting everyone figuring it out right now, in these 2 drafts, he's averaged 3.5 overall. So he was drafted 3-1 and 4 in another. So yeah, people are in on him.
Yeah. I mean, bring up good points. I just like the other guys better. It's again, nothing against Sam. Maybe a little bit, but my number one is DJ Uiagalelei. I love this kid. I think he is going to be extremely special. And the one, like, he just looked great against Notre Dame in his, you know, that big night game where the whole country was watching. And I think he is going to be phenomenal. I think he's going to be a transcendent player at the next level. I don't like using the term generational, because people use that term every single year about multiple players, and it doesn't make any sense to me. But I think he's going to be special. I absolutely love the fact that he is 6'4", 250, and can run the ball effectively. He's got a cannon for an arm. Justin Ross hopefully coming back helps him a little bit as well. We'll see what Clemson's wide receiver room looks like. They're also losing a couple of players. So yeah, I'm excited. They've got a good young receiving core like Ladson and EJ Williams there. So it'll be fun to see what he can do. I'm excited for him to kind of have the reins at Clemson. Of course, he has to play this year and next year before eligibility because he is only a freshman. So you do have to wait a little while on him, but I think it'll be worth the wait. Who's a dark horse guy? Someone not in your top five, but someone that you could see, you can define it however you want. Someone that maybe you just think is underrated or someone that you could think could break into the top five. Who's a quarterback? And then we'll take a quick break and jump into running back.
So I've mentioned this guy plenty of times over the course of the year, and that's Jaden Daniels. He is 6'3", 185 pounds. Maybe, I don't actually know if I believe that 185, but whatever. He started as a true freshman, passed for almost 3,000 yards with 17 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Obviously, Arizona State had a lot of issues with games last year, so they only played 4. The scary thing and the only reason why he isn't in my top five is actually because his completion percentage dropped from 60.7 down to 58.3, and that's kind of a concerning threshold if he isn't above 60. And his adjusted yards per attempt went from 9.4 down to 9. But he did up his average rushing a little bit. He jumped up from a 2.8 as a freshman with 3 touchdowns all the way up to 6.8 with 4 touchdowns. And mind you, again, that was in 4 games last year. So hopefully the full sample helps him. I actually don't think there's a strong likelihood that he will enter the draft next year. So he doesn't get the bump that maybe a Howell or Rattler get, because I just think it's fairly unlikely that he will actually enter the NFL as a junior. So just, I mean, he's a great player. He is a dual threat quarterback, despite the fact that his numbers aren't, he's not going to be like a run first, but he is a dual threat. So player to watch. And yeah, if you want to not pay up, I think he's kind of the perfect target to go for in like Devy auctions, because I think he's going to be almost free. And that's kind of, if you don't want to pay up for like a Howler or a Rattler, Daniels is a guy you can get for nothing.
Yeah. I actually just acquired him in a trade for almost nothing in one of my Devy leagues, and it was fantastic. I'm going to talk about a gentleman that you've already mentioned earlier in passing and shares the same last name as Jaden. It's JT Daniels, quarterback for Georgia. I am really excited about what he can do. I think the skill is there. I get a little bit nervous just with the offense that they do just love to rely on the running game, and they don't mind winning 27-10 with 3 rushing touchdowns. But he started this season late, of course, all the controversy. But his first game against Mississippi State back in November, he threw for over 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. Absolutely stellar game. And he ended up finishing the year really, really well. I mean, he played against that Cincinnati defense, which was really good. He was able to put up 390 yards and a touchdown in that game. I think with a whole season of games at Georgia, as well as an offseason to prepare, I think he could be really, really special. He's someone to me that could really make a jump. And again, at 6'3", 210, he has that frame that scouts will drool after. And I think he could end up getting some pretty significant draft capital. I could see him going really, really early in the NFL draft. So JT Daniels, definitely a name you've heard before, but for good reason. He is going to be, I think he's going to be really special this year. And so I think it's worth talking about him. So just want to remind you guys, we've talked a lot about what we offer at RotoViz as far as tools and stuff like that go. Please do check it out. There is so much to do. And so much to play with over there. Right now, you can get a 10% discount if you use the code RVRadio2021. So head over to RotoViz, check it out. There's some great stuff there. Matt did a nice job explaining some of the tools that he really likes in last week's episode. So check out RotoViz Radio again. The discount code is RVRadio2021.
All right. So you know what position everyone likes to value? Running back. And you know why? It's because running backs are important in fantasy football. And you know what? I started us off last time, so I'm going to let you start us off here. But who is your number 5 running back? Or as our show doc says, who's your number 10 running back?
Yeah, I don't know why they did that to me. So Zamir White, I'm just on a Georgia, role right now. Zamir White was a guy who was a five-star recruit, a highly touted running back. People were very excited about him. And all he's done since joining Georgia is disappointed. He's only averaging 5.3 yards a carry. He's only got 8 receptions in a total of 22 games. And there's not a whole lot when you look at the stats to get excited about. However, I do think the skill level is still there. I do think he has the ability to really pop. I feel like part of the reason I have him ranked here is more because, like, I think there's a clear elite tier and then a very, very, very good tier and then everyone else kind of. And he's my third favorite in the everyone else. So not a whole lot to say about Zamir White. I'm not going to be the one to sit here and preach and tell you that you have to use an early pick on him. But he is someone that I am looking to acquire in trades, because I think the value on him has really dropped. And I could really see with Daniels at quarterback, I could see this offense taking off, and I could see Zamir White being a big part of that.
So I respect that. He's not in my top five.
That's right.
A player in my top five is a guy that might actually be a little bit controversial, because he just left a dumpster fire and went to a team that everyone thinks is a super pass heavy team. And that player is Eric Gray, who is now at Oklahoma. So you mentioned when we were talking about Rattler, his kind of big turnaround. Quick reminder, what was the other thing that happened when Spencer Rattler's turnaround happened?
Stevenson returned.
So Ramondre Stevenson returned. And part of the reason why that is such a big deal is because, well, Oklahoma is quietly a team that really likes to establish the run first and then allow that to really open up the passing game. So what that means for a guy like Gray, who is a pretty heavily utilized player, he did split time with Ty Chandler at Tennessee, but he was pretty productive. What that means is that he'll get a lot of opportunities when defenses are sort of looking for the pass. So he should get opportunities for a little bit of production. Here are the red flags about Gray. His career right now, he is averaging 5.1 yards per attempt. And I know, in passing, that sounds really good, but in the reality is when we're looking at pro prospects, we're really looking for them to get close to 6, because at the NFL level, it's only going to get better and better and better. So if you're only averaging in the 4s as a college player, what are you going to do when the talent is even better at the next level? So it's kind of concerning there, but here are the things that we do like about him. Number one, he immediately made an impact in the passing game as a freshman with 13 receptions for 115 yards. So averaging 8.8 per reception. This was a year where he was seen as the absolute second string on the roster, and he made an appearance in all 13 games and had 101 touches and or 101 rushing attempts. So as a sophomore, as Tennessee was very much a dumpster fire, he took a little bit more of the workload on. He had 157 rush attempts, but the big thing for me that stands out is he had 30 receptions. Turn those 30 receptions into 254 yards, holding on at now, even with basically doubling his workload, basically holding on to the same plus 8 efficiency. So he is at 8.5 yards per reception. So he looks to me like a player that has the ability to be heavily utilized in a passing game. So that should help out in an Oklahoma offense that has in the past utilized the running back in the passing game. So I think this is a good landing spot. And I do think that if he can put together a really strong year, and I think based on the roster and what we saw from the non-Ramondre Stevenson running backs, I think Gray's going to be the clear-cut leader, assuming that the portal doesn't – I mean, assuming the NCAA doesn't, like, back out of their – they're going to make everyone eligible. So with him being very likely media eligible – going into a location where he should get a lot of really strong production, I really like Eric Gray to be kind of the breakout running back in this next year's class.
Yeah, I like that pick. I do. He was a name that, you know, just missed out on my top five. If I was being influenced heavily by peer pressure, I would have pushed him in there just because you talk so highly of him. That's and cool. I think you are right about him. My number four guy is Jerrion Ealy. He is a former five-star prospect. He was a number 3 running back in his class. Super, super exciting player. In both his freshman and sophomore year, he had a kickoff return for a touchdown, which I know you love to talk about. And I like it when they had to score touchdowns. It gives me more to talk about as well. So that's super fun. He averaged a rushing touchdown in every game this year. His average yards per carry went down, but I think part of that is just the role that the running game plays in a Lane Kiffin offense. I'm excited about what he can do at Ole Miss. I'm excited another year with Lane Kiffin. I think he could really, really break out in his junior year. He averaged just under two receptions per game this year with 10.3 yards of reception. So really exciting player. I'm excited. I'm saying excited an awful lot, but that's what Ely does to me. Jerrion Ely is a guy that I think doesn't have quite the name recognition because he does play at Ole Miss as some of these other players. But I think he is extremely talented, and I think the production will be there. So Jerrion Ely is number four for me.
It's fun because we're now drafting baseball players. So I'm also for Jerrion Ely. He's really good. I honestly don't have a ton more to add to what you said. I think he's going to have a productive third year. I hope he makes the decision to jump to the NFL after this year. And he seemingly turned down Major League Baseball altogether. So we don't have the flight risk of him going to baseball rather than football. So I'm a big fan of his. I hope he puts together a productive year, because you may notice this list does not actually have a ton of fun in the class of 2022, because this class kind of sucks. And if he can become good, it will help.
Right. Who's your number four?
Oh, shit. I forgot I wasn't going first. my number four is Jahmyr Gibbs. And he was a true freshman last year. I totally forgot. It's fun. He's not forgettable at all, I promise. As a freshman, came in, had 89 rush attempts for 460 yards and 4 touchdowns. He also contributed 24 receptions for 303 yards and 3 touchdowns. Also, fun fact, he did a lot of work as a kick returner. Basically, what I'm saying is Georgia Tech said, Jahmyr Gibbs guy, he's the best player on our team. We're going to get him to touch the ball as much as possible. When Georgia Tech needed offensive production, when they needed any type of explosion on offense, they went to Jahmyr Gibbs. We talk about it all the time here. It's really good to see players get on the field as a freshman. It's even better when they're doing it a lot. And Jahmyr Gibbs got on the field a lot. He was a highly touted prospect. He was a pretty high 4-star prospect. He was deciding between Ohio State and Georgia Tech were his final two schools. So that should tell you the caliber of player he was coming out of high school. So, yeah, he's one of those guys that I'm not really letting the 5.2 scare me away because he has such strong receiving production. I will say that for a guy that is not eligible until 2023, you are going to have to pay a premium for him. It does look like in both of the Devy Warehouse drafts. Let me confirm this. In both of the Devy Warehouse draft, he was the 6th overall pick. I would not take him there. There are other guys I would take above him, but he's a very strong prospect. Since I already told you my number three pick, let's jump back over to yours.
Yeah. So yeah, you had Jerrion Ely at number three. My number three has a lot in common with Jahmyr Gibbs. He was also a freshman who saw a lot of production. He was also very highly recruited. He was, in fact, the number four running back in his class, and that is Tank Bigsby for Auburn. Love this guy's production, especially because he just saw so much work right out the gate as a freshman. He had 138 carries on the year in 10 games. He had 11 receptions. I think he'll add to his receiving prowess. Hopefully Bo Nix doesn't, shut down that element of his game. That could be a problem, but Tank is just he has the making of a true bell cow at the NFL level as well. He's not someone that you have to take out on third downs. I think he could be an absolute stud. Again, I bet you, though, even though he's only going to be a sophomore next year, I bet just like Gibbs, he's probably got a pretty high price tag on him, which means I'll probably not have a whole lot of shares of him. but definitely a player I'm super excited about. If you want to hear more about Tank Bigsby, just listen to any Travis May podcast, because he will definitely be talking about him, because it's like his favorite player. But Tank number three for me.
For a guy that we both really like, he is basically a guy picked around the turn. So you get him in around that like 1-2 turn. So
I'm surprised he's going that late.
Next leagues. Yeah, I mean, I would have thought him above Gibbs in most people's eyes, but whatever. All right. Well, so our top two are the same players. So I'm going to let you talk about the player that you have at number one, and I will talk about the one that I have at number one. But so for number two, I have Breece Hall. You have him at number one. So why do you have Breece Hall at number one?
I have Breece Hall at number one because he currently is the best running back in college football. I don't really know if that's all that debatable, to be honest with you. This list last year, he had in 12 games, he had 1,572 yards and 21 touchdowns. Unreal. He also had 23 receptions and two more touchdowns there. Breece Hall was the focal point of the Cyclone offense and could still not be shut down. The dude is amazing. I am really impressed by him just overall. Like, you watch him play, he's super explosive. He has great vision. I think he's a complete running back. I don't think there's any real question as to who, like, if all these guys that we are being taught that are going to be eligible for next year, like, again, he's only a junior next year, so who knows if he jumps or not. Hopefully he does, just because the class, like you said, is going to be a little bit shallow. But I can't imagine any running back being taken ahead of him in next year's class. So to me, he'll be the first running back taken. He's going to be given a workload right away in the NFL, and he's shown that he is extremely capable. I love Breece Hall. I feel offended by you not having him number one.
So I don't have number one because there's a better running back out there. It's just he's not eligible next year. So this is one of those situations where I am just taking the best talent. This would probably be my number one overall player, and that's Bijan Robinson. So the things we saw from Bijan Robinson this year as a true freshman, mind you, this is on a Texas team that pretty much hates running backs. I don't know if anyone knows this about them, but they just like to run their quarterback into a line and just say, screw it. So the leading rusher for Texas last year was Sam Ellinger, who averaged 3.3 yards per attempt. Cool. So number two on that list was Bijan Robinson, who had 86 carries for nearly double the amount of yards Sam Ellinger had and half the touchdown. So Bijan Robinson as a freshman had 86 rushing attempts for 703 yards. So that's an 8.2 yards per attempt, four touchdowns. And then he did contribute in the receiving game with 15 receptions for 196 yards and two more touchdowns. The reason why everyone is getting excited about him, however, is we all just saw the elevation of Najee Harris at Alabama, and it was largely because they had Sarkisian there. So now Sark is in Texas. We all saw that fun game. And if Sarkisian does to Bijan Robinson what he did to Najee Harris, he's doing it with maybe a dude that has more talent, which is kind of crazy to say. Bijan Robinson was one of the top running backs in the class of 2020, and he was the guy that Ohio State desperately wanted. He is a complete back. The only question mark anyone has with him is going to be his breakaway speed. His 40 time may not actually be spectacular, but I'm going to be honest with you. He's averaging 8 yards per attempt on an offense that, I mean, is anyone super scared of Ellinger as a passer? I don't know that anyone is like terrified of Sam Ellinger as a passer. So next year, when they have a little bit more of an offense that will lean into him, I think Bijan Robinson may become one of the more dynamic running backs in all of college football. I think there's I wouldn't be shocked if he outproduces Breece Hall next year, and that's on a better team. So I think it'll be an interesting year for both of them. I do like Breece Hall. I think one of the things that you failed to bring up about him is just he did this as a freshman too. Like he was an instant impact guy also, but he really did elevate himself as a sophomore. So his freshman season, Hall had 897 yards and 9 touchdowns, and he did add one more receiving touchdown. So Hall is a special player. I think that, again, it's sort of where your roster is set up. And if you are a guy that is, I'm a running back away from winning, just take the guy that you can get sooner, because I think there's very little doubt that Hall is going to be the number one guy coming out in the class of 2022. But with that being said, I think Bijan Robinson is something special. And yeah, I mean, with both of them, you're going to pay a high premium for. You're not getting either one of them outside of the top 5 picks in Superflex. If it's a one QB draft, good luck. They're probably going to be the top 2 picks overall. So, get one. If you can get one, get one.
Yeah. Let me give you my kind of dark horse, a guy not in the top 5, but I could see.
Guy, I fight you.
No, I won't take your guy, because you kind of downplayed him when I brought him up on Travis's show the other day. And that's DeMarcus Bowman, former Clemson running back. He was a 5-star, had a 99.09 score. He was number three running back in his class. He has excellent vision and burst, great pass catcher, kind of a Travis Etienne style with his just ability to be super relevant in all facets of the game. He just transferred to the Florida Gators, so that will be interesting to see what he can do there. A lot of changes, you know, with the quarterback, tight end, wide receivers, all leaving Florida. It'll be interesting to see what they do. You brought up the point yesterday that, you know, you were afraid that he might not see much work out the gate because Florida tends to rely on people that have been around for a while. So it might take him until his, you know, he's going to be a sophomore this upcoming year, might be before his junior year that he really breaks out. But Bowman, if you've got some deeper Debbie drafts where you can sit and wait on a guy to break out, I think Bowman is going to be, I think he's going to be really, really good. He has the pedigree, and I think the opportunity will arise for him as well.
I'm good with that. I think he's a very good player. I think that I do just worry he won't see the field right away. All right, I'm going to give two names, because one of them is a name that we probably should have mentioned between the two of us, and one of them is a name that I love. So the name we should have said, because he's going to be a fringe first round pick in most Debbie drafts, is Isaiah Spiller. We've talked about him enough this year. I don't love him. I think he's an average prospect, but there's going to be a lot of hype this year with him if he's productive again. So Spiller is a guy that is going to be pricey, probably a second round pick, maybe a fringe first round pick. So whatever. The guy I love, though, and you can get him a little bit later, because he is another one of those guys who was a true freshman last year, and that's Diamante Trainum. He is a running back for Arizona State who was a top prospect out of the state of Ohio. As a true freshman, he rushed for 290 yards on 49 carries in 4 games. So that 5.9 yards per attempt, it's a little bit worrisome, but the only reason I'm not stressing as much is because it's 4 games and it's only 49 attempts. So I would have liked to see this be a little bit higher, but whatever. We'll see if it improves. If it doesn't improve, then yeah, panic season begins. But with that in mind, his debut game against USC, so arguably the best team that they had on their schedule, he had 12 attempts for 84 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I'll be honest with you, this was the only Arizona State game that I actually made an effort to watch this year. And
it was a super fun game.
he was the difference maker in this game. And honestly, like, USC was really lucky to come away with this game with a win. And the big reason why Arizona State was ahead was because of some explosive plays done by Mr. Trainum. So I don't know why I call him Trainum. I mean, why I call him Mr. He's like over a decade younger than me. whatever. So Trainum is really, really good. If you can get him for inexpensive, he's a dude that, you still might be able to get him in even depleted Devy drafts. He may not have been taken last year. So he made an impact last year. So if you can get him for pretty inexpensive, absolutely do it.
Yeah, I am a fan as well. And I think part of the reason, like, they had Rashad White as well running the ball. So, he wasn't just getting all the work. So that's why, you know, he didn't have as many carries. But I think you'll really see a jump there this year. I like those guys a lot. I thought you were actually going to mention Zach Evans, another name to think about. But
yeah, Zach Evans is great. But so, you know, we should check in with some of our favorite sponsors. And one of our favorite sponsors is the Action Network. So we've crowned a Super Bowl champion, and now the NFL draft is coming up, which means it's time to think about how you can or who can win it all next year, and maybe betting a few dollars on it this time. Around this time last year, the Tampa Bay Bucks were 22-1 to win just the conference, which meant that a $20 bet would have paid you out $400, more than that, actually. So if you're thinking about getting into the fun of sports gambling, I just want to let you know about a great resource for sports bettors, and that's the Action Network. The Action Network is where sports fans go to bet smarter and experience real financial gains. In fact, their Action Network app was recently named the best app in the sports betting industry. And with an Action Network Pro subscription, you can unlock the very best of that app. So when you sign up for a subscription, you get access to the Pro Report, which I believe I referenced a few times this year when I was making some picks, which includes expert projections for every game across every major sport. You can see where money and bet percentages are going on every single game, so you can see where the professional gamblers are betting. And you can take advantage of the pro systems, which match historical betting trends with the latest games and lines. And finally, you can track every single bet and get alerts that you make in real time. So if you're looking to bet smarter, an Action Network Pro subscription is the best way to get started. And for a limited time, our listeners can receive 50% off an annual pro subscription. 50%. Just go to actionnetwork.com now and receive 50% off an annual subscription when you use the code ROTOVIZ. It's so easy, I can't even say it. This offer will not last, so go over to actionnetwork.com to sign up for a pro subscription and use the promo code ROTOVIZ to receive 50% off and start betting smarter today. And also read some of my articles while you're there.
Yeah, I was going to say, definitely conflict of interest here because Matt does some writing for Action Network as well. So you know they're good if they've got Wispy the Kid on their side.
Unless I pick Oregon stuff. So if you see me picking an Oregon game, you might want to fade that one. But other than that, use their tools. I will say that pro subscription, I get some benefits of that as a writer. And I'll be honest with you, I look at that sucker every single day. I look at the historical betting trends to see some of the better plays. Every day I get one of the sports in.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sites emails that tells me some of the best plays across the NHL, the NBA, and right now college basketball. Every day I typically get three emails saying, hey, look, this line out there is one that you can go exploit. So it's worth checking out. So whatever. We aren't here on the Action Network today. We are over here on RotoViz. And you know what that means? We still got some Debbie stuff to talk about.
Real quick, before we jump into the wide receivers, just another couple seconds from another one of our sponsors.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. a U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication's appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/RotoViz. Get started now to save $15 on your first month of treatment.
All right, we're back, Matt. I know you were super excited to get to wide receiver. I think it's only because you get to talk about a bunch of Ohio State players eventually. Let's start off wide receiver. We're seeing a lot of elite players leave this year. We've got a lot of really exciting players taking off. And so it's kind of interesting to think, like, who's going to take their spot? Who are some players that we're really going to see rise? Who do you have at number 5?
I'm going to butcher his name. It's Kayshon Booty from LSU. He was a freshman last year. Oh my goodness, I closed the tab where I had his. Screw it. We're going this way. We're going to go and use one of our, we are not going to use that tool because that did not work. But he was an impact player for LSU last year. He did get on the field in 10 of their games last year for the defending national champion LSU Tigers. Who were not great on offense this year. But one of the few exciting points of that offense was this player, Kayshon Booty. That's going to be my thing this year, is I'm going to say his name 12 times. He had 45 receptions for 735 yards and at 5 touchdowns. So he was averaging a touchdown on more than 10% of his receptions, which is always fun. He also did get into some of the fun on kick returns. He had 4 of them this year. So we always talk about how making an instant impact is really, really important for players. And particularly so one of the things that I've had to do is sort of figure out where I care about career market share, where I care about some of these stats that we've used a lot in the past, because, well, I don't think it's fair to compare a guy like Bouts, someone like Jackson Smith and Jigba, who is in a wide receiver room that was a little bit loaded, or even someone like EJ Williams from Clemson, who was in just a really, really strong room. So it's harder to compare those two when comparing something like this. But he did get, looks like it was about 25% of the receiving yards for LSU last year. He was their leading receiver as a true freshman. Now Terrace Marshall did steal all of the touchdowns with 10 of them, but Booty
is what I am seeing here.
I'm going to say his name 27 times every single time.
We already go too long as it is, Matt.
He's a really strong player. He's a true freshman this past year. I think he's going to become the number one guy in the offense with Marshall going to the NFL and with their other strong receiver, Eric Gilbert, leaving for Florida. Whether or not that offense is anemic next year, I have no idea, but he will be a little bit of fun. So again, another guy that is quietly becoming quite expensive. He went at pick 9.5 across these two drafts.
Yeah, wow. My number 5 is someone that you should have heard of by now. I think, you know, early in his career, he was kind of a little bit under. His production has been there since he was a freshman, yet with other big name receiver there, Rondale Moore, he went kind of unnoticed. I am talking about David Bell. His freshman year, he had over 1,000 yards receiving in 12 games. This last year, in only 6 games, he managed to put up 53 receptions and 8 touchdowns, 625 yards. The dude is a stud. I really, really like David Bell. I think he is going to be an excellent wide receiver. He will be draft eligible after this year. He's 6'2", 205 pounds. He has the recruiting pedigree. He's a former four-star guy. I think he could really become a household name. Like, I think people in the Devy community, like, if you're listening to this podcast, you know who David Bell is, but a lot of people don't. And that's going to change this year. He's going to be someone that we're all talking about. I think he has just absolutely huge potential. I could see him being a Calvin Ridley type player in the NFL.
So I'm with you on Bell. I have Bell at 4. So a couple of things that are just worth throwing out there. So as a freshman, so remember, Rondale Moore did miss most of the 2019 season, but who cares? Right. Because the guy that they looked at the minute that Rondale Moore went down was David Bell. And so he had 28% of their receiving yards and 24% of their touchdowns. So he had a dominator rating of 25 in 6 games for Purdue last year. He accounted for 34% of yards and 53% of touchdowns. And some of that actually was with Moore. So a 43% dominator is pretty absurd for a true sophomore. So it's a breakout season as a true sophomore, and he is going in, and now Rondale Moore's gone. So this offense that has been at least willing to be a little bit faster and a little bit more leaning into the pass over the past couple of years, David Bell is going to be the number one guy on that offense. So if he can put together another strong year, I do expect him to get some draft capital. And yeah, this is a dude that actually might be undervalued, because he might, you may not have to draft him in the top 3. And yeah, he may get you that top 3 production for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. My next one's maybe a bit of a outsider pick. I don't think many people have Marvin Mims quite this high, but the true freshman absolutely balled out last year for Oklahoma. He is not a large man at 5'11", 177 pounds. I don't even know if he is that big, to be honest with you. But the dude can fly. He had 9 touchdowns in 11 games. I really like Mims a lot. He also did a lot of work in the return, both in punts and, well, he didn't do a lot of kickoff returns, but he was involved in that as well. But he was their main punt returner. Rambo's gone. I think Mims is part of the reason why they will be just fine. I think Spencer Rattler will be finding Marvin Mims deep often next year. We're going to see him all over your favorite sports highlights streaming service. I think he's going to be awesome. Former 4-star recruit. Yeah, I think the sky's the limit for this guy. I think it would be great if he could put on a little bit of weight, but regardless, I think he has the ability to really, really impress. I'm a huge Marvin Mims fan. So yeah, love it.
I like that pick, actually, other than the fact that it's Marvin Mims and he's not that good. But I do like it. I think he's a talented player. He's one of those guys that should be in the conversation for the top player of the 2023 class. But let's move on to number 3, and it's a guy that everyone knows has my heart, and you're probably going to be a little bit surprised to hear him this early, and it's Chris Olave. Part of me really wishes he hadn't gone out had gone out this past year, because he did have a breakout season. He was the kind of alpha on the offense, and honestly, I think he was pretty close to first-round draft capital, but we talked about it when he made the decision. I think he saw Devonta Smith and said, I'm going to do better, and it might happen, it might not, but so last year he had a 37% share of the receiving yards and 32% of receiving touchdowns. So he did finally qualify for that breakout season in his age 20 and a half season, had 729 yards and 7 touchdowns. Once again, kind of keeping his absurd touchdown rate up. Over his career, he has 111 receptions and 22 touchdowns. You know what I call that? I call that joy. Chris Olave is one of my favorite players in all of college football. He's my favorite player in all of college football. And I think, once again, he's probably going to be the alpha on the offense. The only reason why he is not higher is purely because for wide receivers, I do like them to come out a little bit earlier. I think it doesn't actually make a huge impact from a contract standpoint, but there is some historical numbers to say that players that stay that extra year typically do not do as well in the NFL. Now, with that being said, there's a lot of reason behind that. Is guys who are elite prospects typically make the jump, whereas 4-year seniors are guys that may not actually be worth the NFL. I don't think that's the case with Chris Olave. So I'm hoping he's a little bit of an outlier on that front. But because he is a fourth year player, I am going to have him at my number three.
Yeah, I'll talk about him later. My number three is his teammate, Garrett Wilson. I like Garrett Wilson a lot. I know he's going to be coming up on your list later. And as he is an Ohio State player, I will go ahead and let you talk more about him. He is going to be draft eligible after this upcoming season, which I really, really like. Kid is super, super talented. He plays a lot. I think he plays a lot bigger than he is. He's 6 foot 190, but he is, I think he has the opportunity to be a real alpha on a NFL roster. Super talented, pulled in 6 touchdowns in 8 games. I think Garrett Wilson is someone who, these top three, I think you can put their names in a hat, shake them around and pull them out. And, you know, you can discuss the order. To me, they're all really special. But Garrett Wilson is number three for me. Who's your number two guy?
My number two is George Pickens. And honestly, he's getting a little bit of benefit from having a really, really strong freshman year and then finishing strong as a sophomore. Because I would say for the better part of the 2020 season, we were kind of asking the question of, what's wrong with George Pickens? Why is he not in this like alpha mode that we were truly projecting? And we say that he finished in 2019 with a 0.29 dominator rating. What do you think his dominator rating was in 2020? It was 0.29. So it was exactly the same. So
I wouldn't have guessed that.
So he actually, it was fine. Over his career, he has 34% of his team's share of receiving touchdowns. So that's kind of fun. What kills him is actually his yardage is a little bit lower. So he's had 26% as a in 2019 as a freshman and 23% in 2020. I do think that we started to see a little bit of that run at the end of the year with JT Daniels under center. And I hope that that type of stuff is what we're really starting to see become a trend. So over his final 4 games, he went 87 for 1 touchdown, 25 yards with no touchdowns. And then against Missouri, it was 126-2. Against Cincinnati, it was 135-1. So there was a little bit of that, like starting to get the rapport down with him. So hopefully this is stuff that we continue to see. So I'm a big fan of Pickens. I think that I think most people will actually make a case for him as the number one, but he's not quite there for me.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I do remember earlier on in the year, we were talking about his teammate being like, why is he out producing Pickens? Like, what is going on here? My number two is Chris Olave, who you've already talked about. Love the guy. I don't dock him for staying an extra year. Like, to me, he's still going to be just absolutely, absolutely insane. You mentioned that like he had potential first round capital if he would have come out this year. Like looking at mock drafts before he declared, yeah, he was going in the back end of the first round. I think it's only like when you look at who's all coming back this year and who's left. To me, I wouldn't be surprised if Olave is the number one receiver taken next year. So to me, he'll have the draft capital. He's got the production. He's got the size and the speed combination that is going to work out well in the NFL. Love Chris Olave. Maybe not as much as you. Definitely not as much as you. But I think he's a great pick. He's not my number one guy. But let's hear yours.
My number one is Garrett Wilson. We've talked about him a little bit. But things worth noting is while Chris Olave did have a breakout year, was the number one guy in the offense, Garrett Wilson also broke out. He had a 0.30 dominator, accounted for 27% of touchdowns, and 34% of receiving yards. One of the things that we saw from him was a move into the slot receiver role. So he ended up being the guy that Ohio State said, hey, linebackers and safeties, try and cover him. And they couldn't. And he really exploited that. He was the number two receiver in the class of 2019 behind only Jaden Hazelwood. And I mean, in his 2 years, he has over 1,000 yards receiving. So 432 as a freshman, 723 in just 8 games as a sophomore, and 11 total touchdowns. There's not a lot to dislike, and he did start to be a punt returner for Ohio State across both years. I do think that to me just shows that they have a lot of confidence in his playmaking ability. So I really like Wilson. I've thought that Wilson was the more talented of the two between Olave and Wilson, but I did think that Olave was the better route runner and a little bit better for as a pairing with Justin Fields. With Stroud, I'm actually a little bit interested to see who becomes the true alpha wide receiver. I tend to think that Ryan Day is still going to scheme up a way that Chris Olave becomes the heavier targeted receiver, but I don't necessarily think there's a big gap. My reasoning for having him above Olave is 100% age. So it is what it is. So I think you can't go wrong with any of these top three.
Yeah, I will say, like, talking about age and stuff like that, I think, like, Olave, we know for sure will be coming out next year. What if Garrett Wilson decides to stay another year as well?
I mean, the only difference is the fact that Garrett Wilson was the number two overall player in his – or number two wide receiver in his class, so he probably at that point was expecting a three-year career, whereas I've mentioned this before, but Chris Olave was a three-star prospect. He was a player that by – the normal recruiting standards is not a player that they project to be drafted to the NFL. So I think he was expecting a four-year career. So it is kind of one of those things where if you come in knowing that you are a superstar and you're here for 3 years, it's a lot harder to say, yep, I'm going back, than it is for a guy that maybe when he first got to school planned to be there for four seasons. So I think they're a unique situation, but yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible. Everyone wants to be on Ohio State.
Absolutely. Who would want to leave? My number one receiver is George Pickens. After JT Daniels took over the helm at quarterback for the Bulldogs, he averaged 5.75 receptions a game, over 93 yards, and a touchdown. So his production really, really increased with Daniels at quarterback, who will be, of course, there the entire season next year, ideally, hopefully, injuries aside. I'm excited to see what he can do next year. I think he is going to be primed and ready to go. I don't see why he can't be just everything we hoped he would be after his freshman year. I think all indication says that he will be. So George Pickens for me has just insane upside, especially in that offense. Like, he doesn't have I don't think it's a problem having, you know, if you're Olave, having Wilson on the other side opens up the field for you a little bit, maybe, but Pickens is going to be their main man. They don't have a ton of other elite wide receivers like him that are, you know, entering their, you know, most productive year. So I'm excited for Pickens. I think it's going to be an absolutely monster year for him. And a little bonus, he had not only a great final game against Cincinnati where he put up, you know, seven receptions for 130 yards and a touchdown. He also had a solo tackle and a forced fumble. So, you know, you got to include that in your analysis of Pickens. Not really.
I like that.
Move on.
That's the first in this class. I'm going to roll off three of them.
Okay. Well, Justin Ross is the man for me. We've talked about him last episode. To me, if Justin Ross is healthy, like, you can slot him in with those top three guys that we were talking about, like with Pickens, Olave, and Wilson, because we've seen Ross. I was telling you before the show today, I've been watching some video and some tape on Trevor Lawrence, just trying to get a feel for what it could look like. And I was going back a couple seasons and just seeing Justin Ross when he was healthy and what his production was and just his talent and skill got me super, super excited. So I'm hoping that he bounces back. I'm hoping that the injury doesn't keep him sidelined or that he doesn't get re-injured. But I think Justin Ross has the ability, just the skill set to be an absolute dominant receiver. So I'm hoping that happens.
I'm with you on that. So the three I want to quickly rattle off are, number one is Jaden Hazelwood. I mentioned that Garrett Wilson was the number two receiver in the class of 2020 or 2019. Number one was Jaden Hazelwood, who tore his ACL just before the start of the 2020 season. He was a dude that probably would be drafted really high if it weren't for that injury, but he didn't come back till basically the end of the year. So we didn't get to see a whole lot of him. I do think he will end up being the leading receiver for Oklahoma next year. I know that sucks for Marvin Mims, but too bad, he's better. Number two on my list is Parker Washington. He was he ended up being the second leading receiver on Penn State last year. I think he had about, I don't remember how many yards, and I'm not going to look it up, but he was really good. And wasn't a super highly touted prospect, wasn't the guy they thought was going to make an impact, but sure did make an impact. So if that offense gets going, I think he's just a name to watch. I like him.
more for Devy than I do his teammate Jahan Dotson. So, yeah. But he's a lot cheaper. Number three on my list, and is a guy that I feel like I talk about him every single week, and it's Brew McCoy, former top 10 overall player in the class of 2019, was a listed as an athlete, went to Texas, got homesick, came back to USC, missed his full year, and now all of a sudden he went into a room that might have been one of the best wide receiver rooms in the country. And for me, he made a lot of the flash plays that I was hoping to see. So him and Drake London are going to be really interesting to watch next year, because whoever really becomes that next guy in line will probably put up some pretty serious numbers because of the air raid. So I like all three of those guys as dudes you don't necessarily have to pay up huge for. But yeah, now let's get to the position that's not fun to talk about.
Yeah, we can roll through this one pretty quick.
It's the same five names in slightly different orders.
Yeah.
Number five on my list is Jahleel Billingsley. I don't know how effective the passing game is going to be next year for Alabama. While I do think that Billingsley is talented, I sort of think they're going to try and utilize a lot of their new wide receiver talent, because I think they want to establish the guys that are going to be there long-term, whereas Billingsley is not really someone I think is in their long-term plans. So he is my number five. He made a couple of impact plays this year.
Yeah, my number five is your boy Jeremy Ruckert. Don't look at his receiving stats. He only had 13 receptions in five games, which I guess that's not that terrible for a tight end. But man, he put up five touchdowns. The dude is a touchdown machine. He had some just absolutely studly plays against Clemson that really were eye-popping. I think he could be really, really special. I don't know if he will get the stat production that we might want just from a strict, like, numbers look great. He's someone that you need to target high, but I think he has the skill set. I think he has the hands to produce at the NFL level.
Yeah. He was a former top prospect in his class, and I do like that. Next on my list is Jalen Wittermeyer from Texas A&M. He's fine. I mean, this is where, for me, there's not a lot of excitement. He has two back-to-back years where he had at least 30 receptions. He had 447 receiving yards and six touchdowns as a freshman, 506 yards and six touchdowns as a sophomore. That type of production is very solid for an NFL prospect. And at 6'5", 265 pounds, there's going to be a lot of NFL teams that see him as, hey, maybe we can go use him as that tall guy we need to throw to when we get close. So I am, I'm fine with him. I just think that there's not that much excitement at this position at this point. So I am totally comfortable not taking him.
Yeah, that's fair. Guy I'm going to talk about, you have ranked higher than I do, but it's Michael Meyer, 6'5", 235 tight end from Notre Dame. What's that?
He said he murders the game.
Yeah, he was the number two tight end in his class. Super productive year, really. I mean, freshman year had 42 receptions, 450 yards, only two touchdowns. But again, Notre Dame, they didn't throw. Ian Book wasn't throwing for a shit ton of touchdowns. We saw a lot of Kyron Williams there, who we did not talk about, actually, earlier. I know. I was excited about Kyron early in the year. It kind of fizzled off. But Meyer, I think he has the frame to be really productive. I'm excited to see what he can do this upcoming year. I mean, he was only a freshman and he was putting up these types of numbers. So I think he has a really high floor, but the ceiling is also super high as well. Yeah, Michael Meyer, definitely Mayer. I don't actually know if it's Meyer or Mayer, but definitely a name to keep an eye on. If you are in a tight end premium, or if you're just absolutely crazy and play in two tight end league like I do, someone you might want to go after sooner than later.
Yeah. Number three on my list is Ruckert. Again, we kind of mentioned him, or I mentioned him a lot this year, actually, as a guy that is, his stat production is never going to be impressive at Ohio State. Hopefully this year they actually do start to use him a little bit with some of the other options leaving. However, I don't think that's going to be the case because the wide receiver room is just absurd. But he is the type of guy that's going to kind of look amazing at the combine. And if there's a combine in 2022, which, dear God, I hope we're at that point, there's a combine. He's going to test well. He's going to do well in a lot of the drills. And he is a guy that has a lot of the flash plays. I do wonder a little bit about how an NFL team is going to project him. But the one thing that has been sort of a big statement coming out of camps is that his blocking has improved a lot, which means that an NFL team isn't going to run away from him. So with that being said, he's my number three. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a guy you talked about already, Texas A&M. Tight end. His game against Auburn was absolutely insane. I watched every down of that game, and they really focused their offense on him. He had 8 receptions and 2 touchdowns, and you could tell that there just wasn't any way to slow him down that day. And he has the potential to be a difference maker. He has the he's got great route running skills and good hands. I think he could be an absolute beast. So I have him at number 3. Again, all these guys we are talking about, same names, different orders. Who's your number 2?
Mayer for me is number 2, largely because they did basically see him as we need to put him on the field right away as a true freshman, which is not typically the case with true freshman tight ends. He ended up tying for the lead on Notre Dame in receptions and was 2nd in total receiving yards. Like you said, the touchdown numbers weren't really there, but Ian Book is just kind of hot garbage. He had 15 total touchdowns on the year. They played 12 games. He had 15 total touchdowns. How gross is that? Mayer, murderer. He's really good. I do think that we'll see a little bit more of improvement. Really hoping they end up starting Tyler Buchner next year, because that offense would be so much more fun with Tyler Buchner. But yeah, so keep an eye on him. He's honestly, if I'm in a Devy draft, he's the only other one I would consider other than my number 1. So yeah.
Yeah. My number 2 is Jaleel Billingsley from Alabama, 6'4", 230. I just think something that we've talked about a little bit is just the amount of production that's leaving Alabama from their wide receiver and running back positions. And I think Billingsley could be a major benefactor of that. A new quarterback coming in as well often looks to that tight end position. I think Billingsley, you know, he's usually used kind of as a large slot receiver. He's not usually in line all that much. So I think his production will go up quite a bit. He only had 18 receptions this year. I expect that to increase. I think he has the speed and the size combo that could be very tasty for a GM looking to utilize like that big slot receiving tight end that has become very popular in the NFL. So I just think he's going to be able to be productive at the next level. So Billingsley for me is a guy that I'm willing to take a shot on earlier than probably most people. We have the same guy at number 1, so go for it.
I was going to say we should say it on 3. 1, 2, 3. Eric Gilbert. You didn't do it. So Eric Gilbert was the tight end at LSU last year. He was a true freshman. He was one of the top overall prospects in the class of 2020. He had 35 receptions for 368 yards and 2 touchdowns. We mentioned it a few times. LSU's offense was pretty anemic. His 2 touchdowns was almost 10% of their team touchdowns, which is kind of gross. Whatever. That offense was really not fun to watch. He was the third leading player in receptions for the team. He, I believe he was 4th in total yards. He's really good. He's a freak athlete. And now he's not playing for LSU anymore. He's playing with a coach that has proven that he knows how to utilize really freaky athletic tight ends. And at 6'5", 249 pounds, I would call him a freak. So I think Eric Gilbert at Florida is going to make Florida fans miss Kyle Pitts less. Not that they won't miss him, but they'll miss him less. So, I mean, I love the landing spot. I think he's going to do very well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree. I think he is going to be a stud. Got to wait a while, though. That's the only problem. The only downside is that he was a freshman. You're going to have to wait a couple years on him. And then, you know, in the NFL, a lot of times it takes a year or two for tight ends to develop. So you might be waiting a while before you can just slot him in. However, if there's going to be a Kyle Pitts type player, it's going to be Eric Gilbert. Super big guy, but also extremely athletic, good route runner. He's able to dominate at all facets of the game that are relevant for fantasy football. So I'm excited. I don't know how much like high school tape you've seen on him, but he just is. It's just unfair. Like, they just throw the ball up and he gets it every single time. It's ridiculous. Excited to see what he can do at Florida. It'll be fun. Do you have any dark horse guys at tight end?
So I have one, and he's old as dirt, but he's a family friend and he is returning to football this year, hopefully. And that's Grant Calcaterra. Everyone remembered his freshman year where he was like really dominant, not really dominant, but he made a lot of like some of the flash plays, the similar stuff that we talk about with Rutgers. I remember, I think it was like a pretty crazy one-handed catch in the Big 12 championship game, and he was starting to get a lot of buzz. And then he just really started missing a ton of games as a sophomore, and there wasn't any reporting about it. No one was really willing to talk about it until he eventually medically retired for concussions. Well, after about a year off, and I'm assuming some consulting with physicians, he decided that he was comfortable returning to football, and originally transferred to Auburn. And when Auburn's dumpster fire of a team happened, he left and went to SMU. SMU has, I would define it as a fun passing offense. What would you agree?
Absolutely.
So I think that could provide some opportunities for Calcaterra. And if he does decide that he is going to go to the NFL and give it a try, we've seen highlights from him, and I think he could be a player that can still succeed in the NFL.
Yeah, I remember talking about him a ton, and we were like really disappointed when he stopped playing because he just looked like he could be like, I think we had him ranked as like number two or three tight end potentially in that class. So definitely someone that I would love to see come back. So someone I'm going to talk about is a former defensive end who was transferred to tight end for this upcoming year, but someone who the Oregon Ducks utilized an awful lot, partially because of injuries, but he has, the dude is 6'5", 258 pounds, and can run. His name's DJ Johnson. If he can clean up his hands just a little bit, he could be really, really exciting. I'm not going to use, again, we're talking about dark horses here. I'm not going to use a pick on him, but he is someone that I'm going to be looking at. He had in four games, he had three touchdowns, and each one of those touchdowns was a play designed specifically for him. But he had 113 yards on the season in those four games. So nothing like outlandish and exciting. But I think he has, his first year switching over to tight end, he has the ability to be someone that, you know, we end up talking about from time to time. So I just wanted to throw his name out there. DJ Johnson, tight end, Oregon.
I can support that.
Yeah, right. I don't believe you at all. No. But I'd like for it to happen. It'd be fun. And the kid is, yeah, he's very athletic. He just drops some passes. So if he can clean that up, I think it could be really fun.
Yeah, that is how I feel about a lot of tight ends. So
he's a player who is a tight end.
That is all we need to say. Tight end, and that is a football position. So, yeah.
Well, cool, man. It was good talking some Debbie players, our top five at each position. We'll be back in 2 weeks to get into, I don't know what, maybe by then we'll have some time to get into some coaching talk. I think that'd be fun. But yeah, good conversation. Definitely stuff to look at. We'll be diving into more and more as the off season continues. Again, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening. Matt, anything you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Bye, Chris Olave.
You get to say it a whole nother year. I love it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.